The entire musical score accompanying this film was composed on a computer that can produce nearly endless variations of sounds.
My name is Vicky Bennett, and my artist name is People Like Us, and I've been making multimedia collage work since, well, sometimes I say 1990, 91, 92, depending on what I did. I started quite a long time ago, and I've been moving across media and through media ever since. People Like Us was a name that I came up with on a whim. It was just when I was making mixtapes for people at home in Brighton in 1990, and it was literally just something, one of many names to just put on the side of a cassette. I didn't know that I'd be using it several decades later. It's something where it was good for sampling. Like it's always a strong identification part of a sentence when people say it's always people like us that blah de blah. And since then, my understanding of what identification with a certain group or self is in a more complex way, I think. But it's also, it's whatever people think it is, because it was something that just got made up on a whim. Just as well it was an all right name.
When the conductor establishes a new rhythm, tempo, or mood. The tempo slows as the conductor brings the sound volume down to almost a whisper.
Folk art tradition. So there was the artist Walter Benjamin, who talked about mechanical reproduction and the invention of the printing press changing everything. And I'm following on from that is the art of mechanical reproduction has moved forward to the art of digital reproduction, and I'm an artist living in the digital era. So what I'm using is copies of things, which I then recombine to make new work. That said, every artist is working with a pre-made subject matter, pre-existing material in some way with previous context. For digital and analogue reproductive media, the archive is a library. In the same way, for a writer, the archive is a library. So the archive is a library, and it doesn't matter what medium it is. And it's very important that libraries are kept accessible and fluid and forever updated in their meaning with no rules. Before around the year 2000, with high-speed computing being more affordable and high-speed internet rather than dial-up, things were more local and analog. I think of analog as being local. And therefore, your limitations were more and your self-discipline less because you were limited by the medium. And post-2000, talking, you know, as someone in the UK anyway, things became more affordable with access to all kinds of things without limitation, which meant that you had to limit and discipline your working structure. So both require discipline, but it's changed because of the medium. Yeah, meme culture is definitely my favourite kind of art because it's full of life. It's not pretending to be anything other than it is. It serves no purpose other than what it is. It's made by people who don't pretend to be anything other than who they are. It's not commercially viable, and it's done for the right reason with joy, humour, and love. And love, and that's what I'm doing. Well, I hope the meme culture is the immediate spontaneous response of groups of people to all enjoy a joke together through the medium.
It's interesting to me that you say the unexpected things that happen.
Yeah.
Because in a sense, the computer has done exactly what you told us to do, right?
The intellectual approach to art is one of what you know and what you don't, and what you've read, and what you consider to be important. And it has a hierarchy attached to it, and the idea that something's right or wrong, whereas an intuitive is just what you feel in your heart, might not have a meaning that has any intellectual reason behind it. It's without reason, and it's more fluid, whereas an intellectual approach would be seen to be more like that you can do something right or wrong.
Where are we and what are you doing?
So today, I was invited to do a performance lecture by Tony Harrington from The Wire. And I said, what's that? and he said, oh, you know, an artist talk. He said, I was just being pretentious. I said, oh, right, yeah, I can do an artist talk. So I'm doing an artist talk, which kind of probably looks like a performance lecture, except I'm sitting down. We're not live streaming because there are robots on the internet that aren't very intelligent and assume that something made by a corporation that you might have referenced belongs to their mummy and daddy, and then they mute your stream on corporate websites. It's very common, and it mucks up the stream. So we're taking it out of time, which is fine. Everything's out of time anyway. We're going to do it as a podcast.
My name's Tony Harrington. I'm the publisher of The Wire magazine. And tonight's event is the second of three talks, presentations, come lectures, part of a series that has been programmed by The Wire called Music by Any Means. And a very loose idea is to talk about different approaches to making music, non-traditional approaches to making music, organising sound into music and so on. Tonight we have with us Vicky Bennett, also known as People Like Us. And since the early 90s, Vicky has been making music, not just music, making audiovisual works, but also making music, very much applying the ideas from collage and montage techniques, more associated with visual art and film, maybe, but using those techniques to make music. So Vicky's going to give a presentation about her work and her methods and so on. So please welcome Vicky Bennett.
That's good. Well, very nice to see you all here. The kind of lecture I'm doing is a kind of straight up artist talk, so I'm going to be very much improvising on what I play. I've resorted to this rather than a PowerPoint lecture or anything. Playing some bits, talking about them, and just seeing where we go in the next 45 minutes. What I'm going to play first is, shall I tell you about this first? When I was working to start with in the 90s, I was very much working in an analog way. I was always interested in visual art, moving image as well as sound. This wasn't necessarily because I thought I had a path that I was taking. I've never really known my path. I kind of get it now in retrospect. I feel that many paths in life are learnt in retrospect, that you think you haven't got anywhere and then you look behind you and you see where you just walked from. It doesn't make any difference to where you're going, though you still don't know. In the analog days, I was very much, in 1990, I was living in Brighton, and I was working with a hi-fi based setup of a mixing desk, record player, cassette decks, not even CD player. So hi-fi based radio as well. And I was using the mixer as my tool. I didn't really have any idea about what I was doing as an art. I wasn't an artist as such. I just liked creating mixtapes and making mixtapes for people, very much on a local level once again. And People Like Us was just something I came up with very much on the fly, something to put on the spine of the cassette before I shared it with maybe 10 people. What actually made things move beyond the living room was the setup of a radio station called Festival Radio in Brighton, which came about as a result of Brighton Festival. It was on every May for a number of years, temporary license, one month. And they could always fill the daytime slots with the kind of thing you might hear in a bar. But the nighttime slots was where they put the weird things and the things that kind of didn't fit in. And so there were five of us, and we were given the midnight to as long as you can handle it slot. And I had I had one of these as long as you can handle it slots, and I had a show called Gobstopper, which thankfully I don't think there's any surviving cassettes of. The idea being that a gobstopper is something you suck and it keeps changing colours, and then you get to the middle and there's this bit of aniseed and you don't know why. So that was kind of the premise of the show, was making these expanded mixes. And then I realised that these mixes were more than the sum of the parts. Once again, all on cassette, just and recording things for that. At the same time, there were things in Britain like Our New Sounds, it's kind of British hip-hop derivative music. There was also people like Nurse With Wound making experimental media using found sounds. And also people like Negative Land, who I just discovered literally because the year before, Mark Hostler from Negative Land had knocked on my door in Brighton randomly, looking for Genesis Peorage, who I knew, and someone in the street had told him about our house. I don't know how, and I don't know who they were, but he came to my house and gave me Escape From Noise by Negative Land in 1988 or 89. He goes, yeah, I'm in this group. It's like, well, I don't know who you are. So that's how I found him. And so there were all these people doing these things, and somehow they were releasing it and they weren't getting into trouble. You know, the bogeyman didn't get them. And I'm not sure how the bogeyman didn't get them, but they didn't. Most people think the bogeyman gets you. They might, actually. I'm not dead yet. So I thought, well, how about I press a record of some of this stuff? And I had some friends in Glasgow. They were also mixed with Genesis Peorage. We just knew them through that. And we just had a side each, and we pressed 100, and we thought no one would want that. And of course, we gave it to Rough Trade and World Serpent, and they sold it like that. And they said, oh, can we have more? I was like, well, we haven't got any more. We haven't got any money. So there began the kind of rather flailing wildly kind of journey into publishing. And that was in 1991. And that continued for quite a bit. As time went on, I discovered that I could indeed afford to buy my friend's Amiga 500 computer off of him. And I bought that, and I thought I was going to do video with it, because it was kind of, everyone did Atari for sound and then Amiga for video. And then I realised I couldn't afford all the stuff you meant to get. But with it came this kind of a little cartridge sampler that was like that, and it's like Techno Sound Turbo. And you just stuck it in the back, it's an 8-bit sampler, and then it came with this tracking program that kind of tracked things upwards, whereas now it's linear, non-linear in that direction, it's upwards, and you could punch in new samples and do improvised sample changes. And that kept me going for about 3 albums, just doing that. And then I got I'm not going to get all too technical here, but it's quite interesting when it's analog, or at least to me, just remembering that I used to do that. I then got a Roland DJ-17, which is like a sampling keyboard, and that you could get 4 seconds of samples on, which is like, whoa, you know. And then when you ran out of the 4 seconds, you got another one, and then on the fly, you put the next one in to carry on with what you was doing. And all my albums that I used to record before 2000 were done on the fly, where basically you would just set up this kind of tag team of domino effect of things all around the room that you then press that and press that, and you just were recording on a DAT tape of a DAT recorder that you went up to London to borrow someone. And so you'd do the whole album in one take. So moving into this century, I was very, very pleased to leave behind that world, I have to say, and I know you can romanticise about it, but quite frankly, I've always wanted to do what I'm doing now. So I'm going to bring us right up to now, where basically we're going to skip the bit where I I realised that I could compose video and sound in exactly the same way. I'm an editor. I call myself a decomposer because a composer puts things together, whereas I take them apart. And I'm also a redirector because everything that I do... I think everyone's a decomposer and redirector. I don't think the fact that I'm working with sample material is any different from working with pulling a bit off of this wall and working with the contents of the brickwork. It's everything has a pre-existing condition to it. It just so happens that mine is actually the media itself. So I'm now working with very much with video, and it kind of dominates much of my time, but it's compositional in exactly the same way as making music. There's an editing decision where you decide what you include, what you don't, what you repeat, where the silence is, and how long it should be, and when to stop. And if you should even start a lot of the time. I've been working on a project for 5 years now called Gone Gone Beyond, which is like what I visualised in the 1980s. I wanted to make a total world beyond what I could possibly imagine, and you couldn't imagine that in the 80s, sitting in an edit suite at my brief time at Brighton Poly. I'm now working with surround video and surround sound, and it's taken a hell of a lot to come on this journey. Along the journey has been working with 2D sound and 2D video, and I'm going to play something now called We Are Not Amused, and it's one of the rare things that I've made, which was made for Channel 4. Normally, what I work with, it's not really possible to put it on corporate media because this, for the same reason that we're not streaming this, is that the robots, whether they're human or machines, decide that they think their daddy owns it. So we actually worked with, we made two pieces for Channel 4 called We Are Not Amused and The Golem. We Are Not Amused is, the whole idea of it is that the muses get fed up with human beings deciding that they owned ideas. And that they singularly owned ideas, and that there was some kind of singular point to that idea, which was the egoic mind, which is complete rubbish regardless of what you're doing. We're all interconnected. We all breathe ideas in. We hold our breath and we die. We have to breathe those ideas out for other people. This is what We Are Not Amused is about. It's about the thought that if you could possibly get beyond yourself, you can share ideas and there's many more. So this is about the muses took all the ideas back from humans because they don't deserve it as a human race. So this is a 3-minute piece.
On Mount Olympus nowadays, the gods, forgotten by the ravages of time, are either catatonically depressed or turning to a life of violent crime. The culprit's principal, the Muses Nine, angered by humans' misguided impression that ideas come from man and man alone, are rampaging to teach mankind a lesson. You artists, writers, scientists, and quacks, here come the Muses for their ideas back.
That's some of what I've been working with Moving Image. Next, I'm going to sort of tell you about my processes. I've said already that my approach to Moving Image and sound are pretty similar. When it comes to actually spatializing, it gets a bit more different. But basically, the way I've always made things is as a collage artist, where I work with pre-existing material that comes with it a previous life, a previous context. From another time. But that said, I'll always say that just because I'm working with the media that I am, it doesn't mean that anyone else is any different. We're all working with the past. So this whole notion of nostalgia, we're all working with that. And I kind of kick against that, really, because I'm not all dreamy with this stuff. You know, I'm working with the present as well. When I put things together, I get to a point where it gets beyond the computer in terms of me actually remembering what the hell I'm doing. So I make mind maps, which I've discovered along the way is what a lot of people do right across different media to keep their ideas going, is they get all the different subjects. You know, writers do this too. They get all the different subjects that they want to include in this mass work that they're making that they couldn't possibly fit on any kind of rectangular screen. And they start just actually making notes, and then they make bubbles, and you get to the point where you can actually get a huge piece of paper and then just put it on the floor with all your subjects and then see how they all link together. And that is the beginning of some kind of coherent composition where everything joins together. And so here we've got all these different bubbles. This was for a concert I made called Citation City, which was using all the different things that films that I could find that were based in London. So here we've got Nelson's Comet column, we've got someone hailing a taxi, we've got the Magic Christian, Great Rock and Roll Swindle. So what I do is when I get all these different sources of films, I'll just edit down each movie file to just the descriptions, and then I can actually tag search within my computer after about 6 months of just watching and listening to things. And actually, at that point, I'll get all the text descriptions from the movie files, save it as a text document, print it out, cut it out, put it all over the floor, and end up with the floor, and often hanging all over the radiators and everything, these things. Which, if you saw when I was on the cover of the Wire magazine earlier this year, I was wearing this. And it looks really nice in itself. And what's nice about it is you realise that within it is your finished piece. So it's like a massive jigsaw puzzle that actually has ultimate coherence, but you just have to put it together. At which point you throw away all of this. I just put it in a box anyway. So I also, part of me wonders if it's even necessary to do this. But there's something about getting it off of the screen, out of the computer, and onto your floor, into a big space, that really, really works. The one on the left, that kind of got a bit mucked up. I think the cat did something on it. But yeah, I've still got all of these, and I think they're very nice in their own right. So beyond that, I'm going to come more to the present. Like I said, I make concerts which are single screen. The most recent one I made was also an album called The Mirror. I started on that about 4 or 5 years ago, I guess. And the concept around it being an umbrella subject of the mirror, which ultimately is to do with the mirror and reflections, but also to do with surfaces, duality, transcending duality. What's the point where one thing stops and the other thing begins? What is that joining point, and does it actually exist? The thought of penetrating surfaces. So what I do is I choose a big subject and then I explore every single thing I can think of about it. And the mirror actually is a good thing that moves us into working with three dimensions, which kind of collage is anyway. Collage is kind of like cubism. I'll show you a bit of the mirror and then I'll show you how that moved on in time as well. So this was an album as well.
Round, like a circle in a spiral,
like a wheel within a wheel, never ending or beginning,
on a never spinning reel, like a snowball down a mountain or a carnival balloon,
like a carousel that's turning, running rings around the moon.
I'll leave that there because that's 40 minutes long. So that's also an album. And what I like about things being an album too is sometimes people haven't seen the visual part, which kind of gives it an added element. And also it's nice to be able to go on tour with these concerts too. So that was the kind of the existential doorway to death section. And I guess I spent a year making The Mirror, which included the album side of it. But at the same time, the thing that I'm going to get onto next, which is what I'm going to end telling you about, is where I move beyond the 2D to the world of surround sound and spatial cinema, which is about to start touring the UK next week. It was while I was making The Mirror that I got what was probably about the 20th email from someone in San Francisco called Not Human, who has got an organisation called Recombinant Media Labs, who is him, basically. He has been making immersive theatre since the late 60s. When everyone else was doing light shows, he was doing dark shows. He's a goth and ageless. He's been around a very long time now. From about 1998, Not Human emailed me once a year, a really, really long email, saying, I've got this space called Cine Chamber. It's a space that's... Well, my memory of it was this size, but having seen it last week again, it's kind of double the length of this room and I guess about the width of this room. And it's a surround cinema, surround sound space, which he's been commissioning artists to make work for about 25 to 30 years. Unfortunately, I've once again forgot the list of who he's made it for, but believe me, the Wire magazine covers all the people that have been in his space and made things. People I remember, people like Ryoji Akita and Finesse, and so, you know, expanded experimental media people, and often coupling up with someone from the other medium. So he started writing to me going, would you make me something? And there wasn't a chance in hell that I was going to make something for him in 1998. I didn't even have a high-speed computer, and I was trying to use, like, dial-up to get on the internet, so that wasn't going to happen. So he was really persistent, and he emailed me once a year, and I'd just keep writing back and saying no. And it was just as I was kind of making The Mirror that in about 2015-16 he wrote, and I thought, okay, maybe I can do this. At which point I knew Peter sitting here, my husband, who also comes from the world, he comes from the world of commercial animation, so also has an understanding of three dimensions in the way that, I know we're in three dimensions, but don't worry about that, okay. I said yes, and there was I thinking we're going to make a four-month project, and we're still making it, like 5-6 years later. This piece called Gone Gone Beyond, which in a way is a sister piece to The Mirror. It's covering a lot of the same ideas about the concept of the... It's not only going beyond the surface, but with Gone Gone Beyond, it's going beyond the idea that that an image is in a rectangle, or that you listen through two ears, or... Photography is like the one eye, and anyone who knows or has read any of David Hockney's ideas, it's totally on a par with that, that actually our experiences in art should be expressed more in a cubist way. Not that it should be, but it's a shame it doesn't get expressed in that way, and we're often limited to the fixed image, and the dead, David Hockney calls it like a dead image because it doesn't have any movement in it, and he says that, you know, if you go to China, you've got a scroll that you spend time walking down it, you know, and that everything is made like a doorway there, whereas for us it's on the wall. You can't climb through the window. It's that kind of idea. It's the idea of penetrating the surface in not only physically, but the way that you think about things. And it kind of broke my mind trying to think, how do you make a piece of film where 180 degrees is behind someone's head? Or the sound, but the sound is a bit different. And then I thought, well, hang on, we've all got stuff behind us all the time. you know, you've got that back wall. Are you having a problem with that back wall right now? You know, we all adjust to the way things are very quickly. And so I thought, well, if I make something for 360 degrees, there's an adjustment period, which is probably the first 10 minutes. And with my stuff, it's probably people naming content, and then they give up, and that's the point where you've got them. And that's how I want it to be with my work, is, yeah, there's going to be a certain point where it's like, well, yeah, that's The Devil Rides Out. But it's not just The Devil Rides Out. It's like you start putting other stuff together, and it's just the same as any other story that isn't found media. You know, this isn't nostalgia that I'm working with. So something like the mirror, I thought, well, that would be perfect to try and spread out. And there's also this thing that I made, The Sound of the End of Music, which is kind of my pop hit of People Like Us, where I mix together The Sound of Music with Apocalypse Now. And it turns out they're in the same key and they were meant to sing together all along. To ever finish making Gone Gone Beyond, because it would mean I'd have to make another one. And as you probably know, anyone who's tried to do anything creative, the blank page in whatever medium is pure hell. There's so much I want to say about this, but you know, time's flying by. There's so much I want to say about what it's like making this, but I also wanted to show you rather than just talk. So it's been a kind of balance of talking about stuff, but also knowing that there's so much more I want to say about what this experience is like trying to make this. I'd mainly compare it to being like a fairground. The whole thing about making things that go all around you is you're thinking about what the people experiencing and what it will be like for them. And there's certain biological things that you have to take into account, as well as people's mental conditions and sensitivities, and not wanting to give them a bad time, but for wanting things to be really powerful. There's certain rules that we discovered from going to visit Cine Chamber and Not Human showing us like 25 different pieces. To do with continuity of image and sound, to do with keeping things on there long enough. Cine Chamber time is double the speed of not being there. It's a bit like anyone who's got an allotment, you'll know that if you think you're going up there for 20 minutes and you come out after 3 hours and you think it's been 20 minutes, it's exactly the same. And there's something about it, it's like it's not overwhelming either. And when I first was going to go into the space, I was really worried that it would overwhelm me and make me feel anxious. And it didn't. You see, those people are not anxious. So it's a nice experience. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to show you. No, I think that's about it, actually. And we are getting up to like 20 to 8 point. But I just wanted to say that this is a rare experience because it takes all this time to make it, and then no one's got to see it for ages because it costs so much to put it on. It's just one of those things where, you know, you do a single screen thing and you can have an impact and lots of people can see it. But this thing, we've gone through a 3 or 4 year torturous process of getting the money to do this. And then we were going to do it last year and there was the pandemic and it all got postponed. So we're really glad that we have got a Cine Chamber of our own now through various funding and support. And we're going to be showing it in Ipswich at Spill Festival next week, Brighton, Attenborough Centre the week after, then Barbican the week after that. I really recommend coming to see it, not because it's my work, but just, you know, there's the legacy of Cine Chamber. It's kind of blown my mind and continues to blow my mind what's possible to make in a place like this. And it's a place. It isn't just something you stick on your head. You know, it's really important, and I really encourage people to make work and experiment and not worry about how you're supposed to do things. Make folk art and don't be scared. Just do it, but not like Nike. Yeah. I think that's all really I've got to say, so thanks.